Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, bringing you the OU's Nach Yomi Project's Perek Gimel of Sefer Micha, the third chapter of the Book of Micha, which is a continuation to some extent of what came in the second chapter, only the turn is here, as we've seen so many times in Navi, to the leadership, and the point being that the leadership is most at fault for the things that go wrong in the Jewish people, as we will see in this chapter. Then we'll have to figure out what is the relationship between the leadership and the people, to what extent were the people complicit or not. That won't come up so much in this parak, but it's obviously a question to ask. Is it the leadership just on their own does terrible things and the poor people get dragged along with it, or is it the leadership sets the tone for the people and the people willingly follow that tone? So that's a question that will come up later. But first, let's just start and see what Hashem is rebuking the leadership for. So, Pasuk Aleph, Va'omar, Shimuna, Rashi Yaakov, Ketanei Be Israel, listen, the leaders of Yaakov and the officers of the people of Israel, Halul Lachem Ladat Et HaMishpat, you should have been the ones to know justice, right? So the Radak says he's now Chozer LeTochacha, he's returning to rebuke them, to admonish them, Shayu Remiriim La'aniyim, they were oppressing the poor, they were causing problems for the poor, as we saw in the previous chapter, in this chapter, when really you should have known the Mishpat. And the Mishpat, the Radak assumes, means, and this is really the fundamental, I guess, assumption of justice, the Mishpat is protecting the oppressed from those who are oppressing them. And in usual cases, that's the protecting the poor from the wealthy. We, perhaps in America, are very used to much of our court cases, much of our civil law, being between large corporations fighting it out over this or over that or over whatever it may be, or criminal cases in which the government is trying to protect the society at large from those who would violate its laws. So all those are important functions of law. But another important function of law is where the poor and impoverished, it's by and large the poor and impoverished. Many poor and impoverished do things wrong, and then the function of the judge is to give them the punishment they deserve. But in many cases, the poor and the impoverished would be taken advantage of by the rich, by the wealthy, by the overprivileged, by the overadvantaged, and that is what Hashem is turning to the judges and saying, you should have known the Mishpat. Pasuk Bet, so ne'e tov ve'ohaveira, and instead you hate good and you like wrong, evil, goes le'o rame alehem, you're stealing their skin from on them, u'she'e rame alatotam, and the flesh from off of their bones, meaning instead of helping the poor and working as a judge to smooth the functioning society so that the maximum number of people have what they need in ways that fit the law and fit the right and fit what's good, so instead of that, they are taking advantage of them and sort of squeezing out of them whatever they can get. For doing this, and they broke their bones. Rashi Radak, one of them, says that you break the bones to get the marrow out inside. Rashi, right? You break the bones to get out the marrow that's inside the bones. For asuka sher basir, and you break it up into bits like as if they're in a pot of basar betoch kalachan, and have meat in a pot that's being cooked. So I think the point of this part of the metaphor, of the imagery, is that it's not just that they took the, so it's one thing to take the skin off of an animal, right, and to eat the flesh of the animal. So, you know, if you were eating meat, that's what we're eating. When you break open the bones, that means you're trying to get every last piece out of it. That is one of the reasons suggested for why there was a prohibition in the Torah. There's, you know, you're not allowed to eat pig, for example, and then parallel to that, largely parallel to that, you're not allowed to break a bone on the Korban Pesach. So imagine, you come to Yerushalayim for the Pesach celebration, you bring a lamb to be killed, you make a group to get it together, you're having a Seder night, and you, that night you're eating the Seder, and you break a bone in the Korban Pesach, you violated a prohibition like you're eating pig. So why would that be? So I think the Sefer Chinuch there suggests that it's because we're not supposed to seem over-anxious. We're supposed to be eating like kings, and kings aren't over-anxious to eat. If that's true, then the image here of Micha is that it's not just, and the eating of meat here is a metaphor itself for the ways they're taking advantage of the poor, and they are breaking up the poor and stealing from them and taking from them. It's not enough to take from them what's easy to take off of them, the flesh off their bones. They're breaking their bones to get at the insides of it. Not only that, they're smashing the bones. So this is in a metaphor. They're not physically smashing the bones. They're smashing the bones of this metaphorical animal to put it into a pot to boil into a soup so you can get the every little last piece of taste out of it. So they're trying to squeeze the poor if we're going to now turn it back. They're trying to squeeze the poor and the disadvantaged for every little piece of what they can get from them. And then when the bad things come to them, to these leaders, to these judges who should have been taking care of the injustice in their society and instead were not, so they're going to cry out to Hashem and Hashem will not answer them. He will hide his face from them at that time as they did evil to others. So, and we're going to move on from here in a second to the Nevi'im is going to be the next section, but even in the judges, the implication at the end of Pasuk Daled, or the assumption of Pasuk Daled, that when things go bad for them, they're going to call out to Hashem, suggests it would be easy to assume, I think it would be too easy to assume, that these judges knew they were doing the wrong thing, and they were just evil people, and they just said, yes, it's wrong to do what we're doing, we're perverting justice, we're bad people, and that's what we're doing. But I find it hard to understand it that way, first because I don't see people working that way in my own time, but aside from that, I think it's because also they hear the Nevi'im over and over again calling out against it. Their response doesn't seem to be, no, we're right for being evil. Their response seems to be, we're right because this is the right way to handle it. Right? When Yeshayahu is prophesying, he's prophesying as people who think that they are more Charedim L'Dvar Hashem than he is. So that whole idea that the people see themselves as right is I think, more of the challenge. It's not the Nevi'im are talking to evil people who know they're evil and are saying, yes, we're evil, we like being evil. They think they're right. So if you say you think you're right because you're worshipping avodah zarah, you're worshipping idols, see, that's a religious debate. They believe that paganism is the right way. You can worship God and many other idols. So that in and of itself is worth recognizing. It's not that the Nevi'im were prophesying to people who understood it was wrong to be pagan. They had decided that it was right to be pagan and to worship many different gods. That decision already makes the ability to hear what a Navi has to say and to respond to what a Navi has to say all that much more problematic. Here, in parallel, I think it would seem to me that Micha is struggling with a group of people, and Yeshaya will struggle with them, and Yirmiyahu will struggle with them, a group of people who have decided that it's right and appropriate to have a financial system in which the judges oppress the poor, in which the judges fine for the rich who are really stealing from the poor in inappropriate ways. So how the legal system worked such that it was considered acceptable for this to happen, we're not told the details of that. But that's, I think, a more realistic understanding of what it was that was going on in the time of Micha. There's a couple of interesting chazals I wanted to mention. Sikta Rabati has a series, and just one of them comes up here. The metaphor here was that they used their teeth we'll get up to that in a second. But there's a Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Kuf Lamed Tet Amud Aleph that I wanted to share with you. Rabbi Yossi ben Elisha says, if you see a door, a generation, Shitzarot Rabot Ba'ot Alav, that has a lot of troubles coming to it, Tseuv Dog B'dayene Yisrael, go check the judge of the Jewish people. Shekol Poranut Sheba'a La'olam Lo Ba'a L'Bishvil Dayene Yisrael. Any punishment that comes to the world only comes because of Dayanei Yisrael. As the Pasuk says, Shimuna Zod Roshei Beit Yaakov Aksinei Beit Yisrael, our Pasukim here in Micha, HaMeta'avim Mishpat, right, who don't like justice. No, I apologize. That's going to come later on as well. Let's go to Pasuk 10. All right, we'll go on now. We'll read a little bit more, and then we'll see all of these very interesting chazals. All right, so let's go on. So Pasuk Hey, he turns now his attention to, we're going to come back to these Dayanim. They're not going to get it so off the hook, as you already heard from that piece of Gemara that I started reading to you, but let's go on and see what he says to the Nevi'im. So, Pasuk Hey, Kol Mar Hashem al Nevi'im Matim et Ami, to the prophets who are leading my people astray, and Ushkim Bishinehem Vekaru Shalom, who bite with their teeth and then call out Shalom. This is the Pasuk Terapati that I want to refer to. The understanding here is these Nevi'im would give their Nevi'ot, and we've sort of seen this in other Nevi'im as well, but they would give their Nevi'ot for money. Right? They would imply, or they would say, they need to eat something before they could give a real good nevuah. So we see this with Yitzchak, really, right? We see that's sort of the, not that Yitzchak was wrong for doing it, but Yitzchak Avinu tells Esav, bring me some food before I eat, and because the eating of this food will put me in a mood that will open me up to give you a good bracha. So it seems like the Nevi'i Sheker, the false prophets, perverted that. That's always the way of falsehood and lies. That's part of what I'm trying to emphasize here with the judges as well. It's rare that you can just say, well, this is falsehood and lies, and sell it to people. You sell it by taking something true and then perverting it and misjudging it. Mordechai Breuer said that once remarkably in terms of biblical criticism. He said they take true things and then they pervert them because everything false has to have some truth to it. So here too, they took this practice. There was a legitimate practice of if you eat something or you get a gift from a person, you might be able to be in a better mood for the nevuah. So they would do that, and then they would eat the food that they were given, the fattened calves that they were given. And then they would say, Shalom. They would call their nevuah would be that there would be peace coming. Whoever wouldn't turn to them for nevuot or wouldn't follow their words, so then they would gather together. Right, this is the way the Radak has. They would gather together these false prophets to give a nevuah against them. So they would gather together to see. The Radak doesn't think the Nevi'im would actually wage war. So when it says v'kitchu alav milchama, that they're going to dedicate themselves to war, and this can't really be war, it means they'll prophesy for them, and Rashi says that they'll prophesy for them, bad things will happen to them, and they'll say the bad things are going to happen to them. So this thing of the teeth was interesting, Psikta Rabbati, that I wanted to mention before, in which Psikta Rabbati has a series of things where it says that Hashem functions midah keneged midah, as we've said a couple of times, but so that it's the things that they sin by a certain thing, and then they will get punished by that thing, and then they will get nechama by that thing as well. So they go through a series of things. So one is they were chote with their lips, so they get punished with their lips, and then they'll get nechama with their lips. So here, katu b'shinayim is right here. Dichtiv hanoshchim b'shinehem. They use their teeth as a vehicle of sin because they eat the food that's being given to them, and then they get false prophecies. Then they're going to get punished by their teeth. There's a pasuk in Eicha, Vayagres bechatzatz shinai, and then they will get nechama with their teeth as well. Uleven shinai mechalav, that one day will have the return to the bracha that Yaakov Avinu gave of uleven shinai mechalav, that the teeth will be white from milk. So that's just an interesting vision of the way this works, is that whatever it is we turn to negative purposes, obviously whatever we turn to positive purpose, whatever we turn to negative purposes becomes the vehicle of punishment, but then will eventually also be the vehicle of nechama. So pasuk vav lachein laila lachem mechazon. So therefore, because you're giving these false prophecies and you're doing it with monetary issues in mind, right? They're doing it in this presentation of it. It's not only they're giving false prophecies because they enjoy saying things will go well and you'll be fine. They're doing it because they're getting fattened calves, and those who don't give them their price and their fee for the prophecies will get negative prophecies. Lachain, and therefore they're going to have a night when they're not going to have any chazon. V'chashka lachem miksom, and it'll be dark for you, so you can't do ksamim, you can't do magic, try to pretend to divine the future. Uva'a hashemesh ala nevi'im, v'kadar alehem ayom, the sun will set on them, and the day will be darkened for them. So that sun setting, the Medrash Tanchuma assumes, when Yaakov Avinu was running away from Esav at the beginning of Parshat Vayetzin, it's doing v'kaba makom, that he stopped at a certain place and he slept there because the sun was coming down, that Yaakov Avinu had a nevuah that the Jews would eventually sin and they would lose Ruach HaKodesh. So here too, the Pasuk is saying the Nevi'im will lose all of their Ruach. So the Pasuk isn't quite clear. The Pasuk seems to suggest that they had some ways of getting some kinds of actual visions, right? They had Chazon, they had Kisom, and they would lose that as well, which plays into one of the things that I've been trying to point out, which is that it wasn't the Nevi'im, just the Nevi'i Sheker just made it up completely. They had some set of practices that would lead in some way to something akin to a vision, and they would turn that and assume that to be an actual prediction of the future that was coming to them. So that again complicates the question of what does it mean to have a Nevi'i Sheker and how do you respond to a Nevi'i Sheker? Because they weren't complete charlatans. They just went into the room and said, oh, let me make it up. They came to believe and to understand that what they were having was an experience akin to prophecy, and that experience akin to prophecy was a nevuah and was telling them what they should be saying. So then you wonder, when they as we saw in the previous psukim, when they predicted bad for those who didn't give them fatted calves, or predicted good for those who did, is it they just made it up and they said, oh, I don't like this guy because he doesn't give me food? Maybe. But it might even be a little more subtle than that. It might be they would go off and try to have their visions again, and because they were angry with the people who wouldn't give them money, and they were happy with people who would give them money, so these fake trances and seances they have would produce in them experiences. So, you know, in a parallel today, if somebody, let's say, and I'm not recommending this in any way whatsoever, but if somebody went on some kind of a hallucinogenic drug and came out of it thinking that was a vision that predicted the future, right? If somebody came to believe that these drugs actually give you a tapping into the spirit of the universe, you could easily imagine a New Age person saying things like this, tap you into this so you have peyote or LSD or whatever the drug of the day may be, and you come to believe that those actually have real meaning to them. So if it's true that those things really tap into your psychology at least as much, if not more, than tapping into what Hashem really wants, so then it's easily plausible that your psychology would tend to give you predictions of good for those you like and predictions of not good for those you're not happy with. So those who don't give you the food that you want and long for could easily come out in those visions to be bad.
So the thing that Hashem would be complaining about here would be that they allow themselves to think of those things as true and they allow themselves to follow that.
So that's the greater challenge of what Hashem is presenting to the Nevi'im. The challenge isn't to stop lying to the Jewish people. I mean, it is that. But it's first, the challenge is to realize that what they're doing is a lie, because they don't realize that, because they quite likely think that they're telling the truth and that they are presenting real visions. And that's a much deeper and much harder addiction, or a much harder tendency to fight against and to win out against, because your system tells you that you're right, and you have to come to accept somebody coming from a different system telling you you're wrong, and accede to that and come to admit that everything you've done, everything that you've built, your whole vision of how prophecy works and how people work has all been wrong. So that's a greater challenge. But that is what I think the challenge that the Nevi'im here are being upbraided for having failed at doing. So Pasuk Zayin, Uvosha Chozim V'chafur HaKosmim V'atu Asafam Kulam. And so they're going to lose all of their visions. They're going to lose their ability. They're going to lose any of their ways of tapping into what they think of as the future. And it's going to be upsetting to them. So they're going to mourn. V'atu Asafam Kulam is they're going to cover their upper lips. This is one of the practices of mourning we see in Hilchot Avelut. The Gemara still knew of this practice, that you would cover over your beard and your mustache as a sign of Avilut, in ma'ane elokim, because they would have no reply from God. There is a reply of any sort. V'ulam, Pasuk Micha seems to be talking, V'ulam, Anochim aleiti cholachad ruach Hashem, I'm filled with strength by the Spirit of Hashem, mishpat ugvura, and a knowledge of justice, and a knowledge of what the right of heroism, of courage, lagid Yaakov pisho, l'Yisrael chatato, to tell the Jewish people what they've done wrong. So Micha is suggesting that one of the ways that you might come to understand that your nevuot aren't real and are more a reflection of your psychology and of some kind of a trance that you managed to throw yourself into rather than of the real thing that Hashem wants for you is that you come out with prophecies that are all good to the Jewish people. Especially if you're living in a society which, as Micha is portraying it at least, is stealing from the poor, and we know from elsewhere is on the verge of, if not already involved, in idol worship. And there may be killing going on, right? Or there may be people killing the poor and the underprivileged and things like that. There may be various sins of a lack of justice, let alone of not keeping Shabbos and of not appropriately treating each other and of. So you live in a society like that, and you go into a trance, and all you come up with is, it'll all be good, it'll all be peaceful, it'll all be fine. So the people will love hearing from you, and you'll be successful in that sense. But that, Micha suggests, perhaps as a first indication, that your nevuot are not real nevuot. So now Micha turns back to the judges and says, listen to this, the officers, the leaders of the Jewish people who reject justice and everything that's good, straight, proper, and honest, they make crooked, is the way the English has it. They turn it into bad. But that word yakeshu, I find interesting in the light of what we're talking about here, because because we have this word yakeshu. I'm here. Here it is. The Ramban in Devarim, when it says dor ikesh uftaltol, this is, which is in Ha'azinu. So the Ramban says ha'ikshut hevachayosher, that Ikshut, so he doesn't define the word really, but when it says Dor Ikeshu Fataltal, Ikshut there, Hefecha Yosher, is the opposite of Yosher, of honesty, of straightness. And then he quotes our Pasuk in Micha, Gimel Tet, Vet Kola Ishara, Yaakeshu. So Ikshut tends to be translated, certainly in modern Hebrew, but even when you see it in earlier literature, so Yaakeshu tends to be translated as stubbornness, right? An Ikesh is somebody who sticks to their own path. So I find it interesting the Ramban would then say that Ikshut is the opposite of Yosher, so we think of Yosher as honesty. And in that sense, Ikshut is not the opposite of honesty. Unless we come to realize, and this is, I think, the point that is latent in what the Ramban says, unless we come to realize that Ikshut, stubbornness, is different than steadfastness, right? If I stick to the right and the true and what's good, and I do it strongly, and I'm unwilling to be moved from that, we could, in English, call that stubborn as well. But I think that in Navi talk, we would call it steadfastness. I am sticking to what's right. Stubbornness is, I am going to stick to what I want to do no matter what evidence I get to the contrary, no matter what comes to my attention, which would suggest that I'm on the wrong path. It doesn't matter. I'm going to stick with what I want. And that is, in fact, Hefech HaYosher. That's the opposite of Yosher. Because Yosher is, you take the truth wherever you find it. Yosher is that you are always on the lookout for the possibility, and this is part of what Micha is directly complaining to these Nevi'im about their failure to do. Yosher is where you are ready to say, what I've done until now has been mistaken or has been wrong, and I now submit myself to the greater wisdom of whoever has presented me with this true Yosher, with this truth. So that is what these people are refusing to do. They know the right way to judge, they know the right way to lead, and that is their stubbornness in the face of Micha telling them, B'Shem Hashem, the right thing to do. And that brings us back to that Gemara in Shabbos, Kiflam Teron Aleph, where the Gemara had said, you have to check, anytime the Jews have trouble, you have to check the Dayanim, because any punishment that comes to the world, it doesn't say to the Jewish people, to the world, is coming because of Dayanei Yisrael, quotes our Pasuk, and it says, and it says it's because of that that you get the various punishments that we're going to have in our coming Pesukim. So that idea that the judges of the Jewish people are the vehicle for punishment in the world at large, I think suggests and points out that part of our role as a people is supposed to be that we are markers, not just of personal piety, not just a connection to Hashem, but of what the nature of righteousness and justice is, and right, financial right, and dealing rightly and properly and honestly with other people. I think there have been times in Jewish history that some of that has been true, but I'm not sure that it's always true. On the question of Yaakeshu being stubborn, I also, just as a personal statement, and I apologize if I'm getting political in a way that people don't like, but I do think it's true that one of the greatest weaknesses of our current administration has been its inability to admit when it's wrong in any kind of a timely way, in any kind of way in which it says, yes, we claim this or we claim that, or we thought this was true or that was true, and we in fact turned out to be wrong. So I haven't seen that a lot from this administration, and I think it's one of its great weaknesses, because the ability to recognize when you're wrong is what we're talking about in terms of Yaakeshu, in terms of not being any Kesh. Any Kesh is somebody who is so confident of their path that no matter what evidence comes up, they insist on following their path, and that's not what we have in our current times to a large extent. Pasuk Yud, Bonetzion b'damim v'Yerushalayim b'avla. So because they do this, these judges, I'm going back to them, I'm getting out of the politics, those who are upset with me, I apologize. I am certainly always open to comments, criticism, and questions. GROTHST@gmail.com. Pasuk Yud, Bonetzion b'damim v'Yerushalayim b'avla. Who build Zion with crime, and Yerushalayim with wrongness, with iniquity, so that the foundations of the city now become rotted by the sins that are involved there. Rasheha b'shocha yifbotu, her heads judge with bribes. V'chohaneha b'mechir yoru, and her kohanim will tell you the halacha for a certain price. And v'yeha b'chesed yigzomu, and for money that the the Nevi'im will get into their trances to find out what's going on. And then they claim that it's Hashem telling them what to do. They say, there's no way that we'll ever have to suffer consequences for acting. There's no way that Hashem will ever punish us for this. And why do they believe that? They believe that because they say there's no that Hashem is with them. So that claim, that assumption, that insistence that Hashem is with them is now part of the function of the sin and is part of the of what leads to the sin being allowed to happen, because they say there's no way that we can suffer the consequences of what we're doing. But you can only assume that, and again, you can't lie about such things. You can't say, oh, Hashem will be with us, when you don't believe it. It's that you come to believe it, that you allow yourself to believe it. That's the greater challenge of sin, is that you tell yourself that these things are true. You tell yourself that you have the right and the ability to act in this way, and that you, in fact, are able to do these things, and they're right, and Hashem is with you, and Hashem agrees with you, and you really are functioning in justice the right way when you're judging this way, and the halacha really is this way. So these are all challenges, and the challenge is that if somebody like Micha comes along, so we think, I think a lot of us think, if Micha came along, we'd say, oh, he's a Navi Hashem, so of course you have to listen to him. But what the books of the Nevi'im show us is that when there were Nevi'im, there were also Nevi'i Sheker, and it wasn't so clear to the people. It wasn't so simple. So how did you know who to follow? You knew who to follow by listening carefully to the Torah, by watching what the Torah says about Nevi'im, and by following the right ones and not the wrong ones, but that was not always the simplest thing. Lachain biglalam, because of these leaders, biglalchem, because of your leaders, the Kohanim, the Nevi'im, and the Dayanim, the judges, the priests, and the prophets, Tzion tzadeh techaresh, Tzion will be plowed as a field, Yerushalayim yinte, Yerushalayim will be heaps of ruins, v'harabayit lebamot ya'ar, and Harabayit, the Temple Mount, will become like a shrine in the woods, right? It'll be in the middle of the woods, meaning it'll be overgrown with trees. And this is the outcome of these sins, and the Gemara in Yoma famously thinks that it's three sins in response to the three central sins, three punishments in response to the central three sins of the time, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Aroyah, and Shfichut Damim. I will note that also when it says in Pasuk Yud Aleph, no, in Pasuk Yud, Bonet Zion Bidamim, so I said it was with money that they got wrongly, and Yerushalayim Be'Avla with iniquity, so that's the way the Radak has it in his central interpretation, but he also notes that Yonathan Ben Uziel's targum was Damim, meaning actual blood, that they would take money to kill people or to allow others to kill people, and then they would build the city with that money. So it was money that was tainted with blood. And whichever interpretation you like better, it allows us a moment to pause and notice that the word for money in Tanakh Hebrew is damim, is blood. So that money and blood are very connected to each other, is right within the spirit of this perek, and it tells us that the dealing wrongly with justice issues, with issues of civil law, of money issues, is actually much closer to an issue of blood and of murder and of death than we might think. One could even then perhaps speak metaphorically, not clearly the Gemara meant it metaphorically, one might have meant it literally, but one could even perhaps speak metaphorically and then say, when we say that they were, that generation had done Gilui Aroyot, incest, and Shfichut Damim, and Avodah Zarah and idol worship, that the Shfichut Damim might not only have been murder, there might have been some murder, but it might have been murder of the kind that we're talking about here as well, Shfichut Damim, of stealing from people and oppressing people, such that they become so impoverished that it's in some metaphorical way like they were killing them, and that is part of what they're being blamed for here as well. But luckily, to our good fortune, Rabbi Akiva gives us a way to finish this parak, at least, on a more up note. Even the parak finishes by just with the punishment, that it's because of these things that Yerushalayim is going to be destroyed. The Gemara at the end of Makot, that I've mentioned on other occasions, but has Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues going up to Har HaBayit, and they get to Har HaBayit, and they see a fox leaving from Har HaBayit, and they start crying, and Rabbi Akiva starts laughing, and they say, why are you laughing? How could it be? Really, it used to be that even if a strange human being went to the wrong place, that he would get killed. And now you've got foxes all over Har HaBayit. So Rabbi Akiva says, because Yishayahu has a nevuah, which he says, "Va'idli edim ne'emanim et Uriah hakohen ve'et Zechariah," that I took as witnesses to me, Yishayahu says, "B'shem Hashem, Uriah and Zechariah." So who's Uriah and Zechariah? They're not the same thing at all. Why are they being put together? So Rabbi Akiva tells us that the psukim in Tanakh are linking the prophecies of Zechariah to the prophecies of Uriah. So Uriah, and then he quotes our pasuk in Micha, which I'll talk about in a second. He says, Uriah said, "Lachim b'klochem tzion sadeh techaresh," that Yerushalayim is going to be plowed as, Tzion is going to be plowed as a field, etc. And in Zechariah it says, Od Yeshiva Zekinu Zekinu Berchavot Yerushalayim, that Yerushalayim will be rebuilt, and there will be once again old people sitting in the streets of Yerushalayim, meaning that they are comfortable and they're free and they're feeling secure. And so Rabbi Akiva says, without the fulfillment of the prophecy of Uriah, I was not positive the prophecy of Zechariah would be fulfilled. But now that I see the prophecy of Uriah fulfilled, I can know that one day in the future the prophecy of Zechariah will be fulfilled. They say in the Gemara, Akiva Nichamtana, you have comforted us. And we can say that Baruch Hashem, we live in a generation where we have seen, we live in three generations, where we have seen the fulfillment of the prophecy of Zechariah, because in fact it's all over Yerushalayim now. You have Baruch Hashem, Zekinim Uzekinot sitting in the cities. We are seeing these things come true, these prophecies come alive, so that Rabbi Akiva allows us, even though we're still in the prophecy of the negativity, and it's worth absorbing, because I don't know that we've lost in our lives all of that negativity that Micha is talking about, and we may still have these situations in our lives today. I do know, at least here in America, many people have difficulties with various Batei Din, or with finding a Beit Din that will function in a timely fashion, that will function in a way that will help those who are being cheated get out of being cheated or get away from their oppressor in a timely, smoothly functioning way. There are Batei Dinim that try very hard at it, but those issues are still, I think, issues that are very alive in America today. So certainly the words of Micha still have relevance to us, but we don't have to finish just by saying, you know, God willing, one day we'll get away from this or we'll avoid these sins. We could say something much more positive, that Rabbi Akiva has shown us that this came true, and also we have the merit of seeing the prophecies of Zechariah that Rabbi Akiva linked to these coming true in our days as well. We can only hope that we continue in that positive direction, to have more and more of the nechama, more and more of the salvation coming our way. Have a great day.